some of us have figured out that almost all American government must be avoided like the bird flu.
It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear. And it absolutely will not stop. Ever. Until you are dead.
That's why she exercised her option to escape. Learn to exercise your options and listen to the Suzanne option exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade Channel. Courage sold separately.
We are in the midst of a big government pandemic. Information and self-reliance are your inoculation. Welcome to the Suzanne Option. Step on up for your shot of freedom. I'm your host, Suzanne Sherman, and you have just tuned into the Crusade Channel. We're here. King-size truth comes at you through radio-sized speakers. Today is Thursday, April 27th, year of our Lord, 2017. And if you are tired of tyrants, then this is the show for you. Later on in the show, Nicholas Somburg, a criminal defense attorney out of Michigan, is going to return. He was on a few weeks ago, and he's going to share some of his latest misadventures in the courtroom. You're going to love his story. And my good friend Gene Carroll also returns to the show to share some of the latest lunacy, some proposed legislation from behind enemy lines in the People's Republic of California. If you feel like chiming in today, the number here in the Bulldog Kia Studio West in the hinterlands of Utah is 844-527-8723. That's 844-5-CRUSADE. You can also send me messages. I monitor those during the show and try to address them at facebook.com/cowgirlesquire. If you're listening to the preview channel, I want to thank you for joining in and welcome you and hope that you decide to join our community here and become a Founders Pass member of the Crusade Channel. If you need a little more time to decide, we have an option for you to take a 14-day free trial while you are on that trial period. Use your time wisely and check out the other shows here. We have some amazing hosts, amazing shows. My Story of America with Dr. Michael T. George, Reverse Deception with Greg Carpenter, The Constitution Hour. I believe they just recorded another episode today with Dr. Kevin Gutzman, who is a history professor as well as the author of Thomas Jefferson Revolutionary, The Radical Struggle to Remake America. Dr. Gutzman returns to the Suzanne Option. He was actually my first guest coming on a year anniversary of my show in the month of May. And he will be with me a week from tomorrow, which will be May 5th, Friday, May 5th. It will be a unique opportunity because his shows are usually recorded with Mike Church. So this will be a chance for you to call in or ask some questions real time. Before we get started on the show, I have a couple of quick announcements to make. I want to congratulate Scott Stallings on a resounding success. PrepperCon at the Southtown Expo Center in Sandy, Utah. I was there last week. That's why I wasn't on last Friday. Remarkable show. It's going to be in May in 2018. I encourage all of you that are preppers, even if you want to get learn a little bit more about prepping, to come on out. It is definitely worth the trip. I want to thank him also for the opportunity to moderate a celebrity panel. It was my first time being before a live audience and doing a panel like this. I had celebrity apocalypse authors A.R. Shaw, Kate Morris, Boyd Craven, and Chris Weatherman, also known as the Angry American. Chris is also a veteran from the reality survival show Alone. He's going to be joining me on my show sometime soon as well. But it was a remarkable event. It really got me fired up to have a To increase my preps and to encourage others and to help educate others. I've got a lot of guests from that show. I met Alan Kay from Alone and some other really, really cool celebrities that will be joining me. So we've got some really cool things planned. I will also not be here live tomorrow. Scott Stallings and his wife will be welcoming a little baby into their family. The labor is scheduled to be induced tomorrow morning. And they asked if I would come and help out at their show, Prepper Talk Radio, on K-Talk Radio. It's an AM station in Salt Lake City. So I will be hosting that, Prepper Talk Radio, with Shane Coles. Also want to give a shout-out and let you know about some other upcoming talent we have. We have the Renegade Rambler Radio Show with our friends Jeff and Daniel, as well as my good friend Rick Barrett has a podcast called The Barrett Brief. So I want to encourage you to, you know, take advantage of not listening. Unplug from the matrix and check out some of this new talent. And I don't think you'll be disappointed. I came across an article today that really it fits really well in with the subject matter that I wanted to talk about. And then, Christopher, let me know when Jean's on the line, if you don't mind. I saw a post today. If you don't follow the Mises Institute, do check them out. They are absolute forerunners in the cause of liberty. And you will hear about Austrian economics, and you'll also hear about, you know, Ron Paul's on there a lot as well. So what I wanted to, I guess she is on there. I'll be bringing her on momentarily. But there is a video on this morning. It's only about 5 minutes long. And Dr. Robert Higgs was speaking about the relationship between fear and government. And this goes back to a question that was presented to me when I first started this show, and a listener wanted to know, what is the quickest and easiest way to stop relying on government? And my answer to him was to prepare to be self-sufficient and not to be reliant on the government, to really depend on yourself. As I've said, being prepared is a matter of personal responsibility. The government thrives on those who are unable and unwilling to care for themselves and who look to the government for safety and their protection. Well, in this video presentation today, he discusses the relationship between fear and government. He starts off, as we know, fear is a primitive reaction. It's a reaction to danger, and its basic responses are running, hiding, or preparing to ward off danger. He explains by telling people not to be afraid is giving them advice that they cannot seem to take these days. People have been conditioned. They are predisposed to fear all sorts of actual and potential threats, even imaginary ones. And the government understands this. They exploit this. They cultivate it. And they use this fear to ensure compliance and popular submission, even affirmative cooperation. I'll give you a couple examples of that. That would be people in California ratting each other out if, heaven forbid, they see wood burning and smoke coming out of a neighbor's chimney, or heaven forbid you're watering your lawn on a day that is designated other one, which the crown has given you permission to water your own lawn. So he says that there is no government power without this popular fear. He also refers to an article, The Anatomy of the State, where Murray Rothbard says that fear is another successful device by which the rulers secure from their subjects acceptance of, or at least acquiescence in, their own domination. And this is what we see. We voluntarily accept this, and in fact, we welcome it. The rulers are supplying an essential service for which society should be most grateful, according to Dr. Higgs. The government assumes the role of our protector against sporadic criminals and marauders. Therefore, fear is a fundamental premise on which rulers base their domination. According to Dr. Higgs, every ideology that endows the state with legitimacy requires and is infused by some kind of fear. Public fear is necessary to a viable government, and this fear can be comprised of a fear of the government itself. For instance, what happens if you fail to comply in local ordinance, fail for you to pay your property taxes, you will get fines. This can be escalated to incarceration or even death, we've seen in some instances. And another example of what we can be, what fear can be comprised of, are real threats. Like I mentioned earlier, the threats of criminals. When I was in California over the holidays, I was witness to many news broadcasts on the local television, and they were discussing the possibility of having a greater police presence in the shopping malls. And all of the people that were being interviewed were saying, yes, I would really like that because that would make me feel more safe. Once again, the people are so conditioned to relying on a police presence so they can feel safe. Here in Utah, guess what? We don't do that. We're allowed to carry firearms. We don't need protection from the Crown. Now, you get into some places like Salt Lake City and Park City, it's very much like California. The third example of what fear can be comprised of are spurious threats. And to that, I would say, you know, look towards the example of the boogeyman of Russia or the war on terror that helps fund our welfare and warfare state. But this is how they get away with all these absolutely insane laws that just seem to encroach upon every single aspect of our lives. And I just came across an article that my friend Jean in California told me about. And this is about, it has to do with our ability to purchase dogs and where we can get dogs, cats, or our furry friends. Jean, I want to welcome you back to the Suzanne Option. How are you?
Good morning, Suzanne. I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Well, you know, we came across this as, you know, California, you would think, would have other issues, other things to think about with their legislatures. This is like Mark Cresson says, if he was going to start a government over, he wouldn't have a legislature, because as I was saying on Mike Church's show this morning, you have your legislature, they come up with laws, and they never leave them alone. They always come up with more laws and don't get rid of the bad ones. I like to subscribe to the Calvin Coolidge mentality. Rather than coming up with new good laws, let's get rid of the bad ones. So we know California has a lot of bad ones. But this law has to do, it's called AB 485, and we have State Assemblyman Patrick O'Donnell had an article where he talks about this. And I guess the effect of this really, Jean, is what has to do with local pet stores and what kind of dogs can they provide?
Yes, that is my understanding. And in actuality, I find it a little bit redundant, because most pet stores, if they do sell dogs and cats, it's under a, quote, adoption clause. Now, this is the general greater Bay Area of California. And in San Francisco, you cannot say that you own an animal, but that you're their their caretaker, you're their guardian.
Your guardian. Which, yes, you're the guardian. You don't own an animal. That's another.
Sorry.
Term. Oh my goodness. Well, let me get into a little bit here, because this is an example of how conditioned we are to accept this kind of control over our lives. Nobody here is saying that it's wrong to purchase a dog, or nobody here is wrong to say that we shouldn't be able to rescue dogs. Rescuing a dog is absolutely a wonderful, wonderful endeavor. However, when it crosses the line from being a matter of consumer choice to being a matter that is predetermined for us, and that choice is taken away from us, you know, I'm a believer that if a pet store is selling dogs and cats from irreputable breeders for profit, that the marketplace should decide whether or not they stay in business or not. And what you mentioned earlier is we're seeing adoption fairs at many of the larger pet stores. And, you know, I approve of that, but it should not be something that comes down through us via legislation. Do you agree with that?
I definitely agree with that. I love seeing the adoption fairs, but for legislation to determine that no, a merchant or vendor cannot sell anything but a rescued animal is limiting our choice. It's limiting our free will. It's limiting our American freedom. And yes, irresponsible pet owners need to be treated accordingly. Irresponsible stores and vendors need to be treated accordingly. But at the same time, don't tell people they can't sell a particular animal.
Yeah, and here's the thing. They're putting this forth as the purpose to end breeding mills, which they admit are out of state. So once again, we have California nanny state seeking to solve a problem by enacting more legislation that further encroaches, like you said, on our choice. Let me read you some of the ad hominem, just pure virtue signaling rhetoric that he puts forth in this article justifying Assembly Bill. I think it's 485. According to Assemblyman Patrick O'Donnell, they are man's best friend. The furry felines who make a house a home, our animal companions, are loved just as though they are members of our family. It's been said that the unconditional love and loyalty of pets can lift depression, ease loneliness, and blood pressure. My own family grew in size with the adoption of two rescue dogs, blah, blah, blah. So here we have some virtue signaling. But what he says here is the benefits are endless. And when you know you have saved your furry companion from an unpleasant life, it makes the bond you share that much more meaningful. Now, Gene, you breed dogs, and you breed dogs because you use them for sport. Do you find that your bond with your dogs is any less meaningful because they didn't come from a shelter or rescue organization?
Oh, heavens no. In fact, it's quite meaningful. You've seen on my Facebook page, I actually went and visited a puppy that I sold several months ago. It's fabulous because I have the choice of who purchases those animals. I have the choice of what I charge and why I charge. It's fabulous. No, they mean everything to me. They're fabulous dogs. But at the same time, if one of my dogs, who isn't a puppy, is going to be in a better home as an older dog, I will sell or place that dog in a better home for their welfare because I love them that much. It's like somebody who adopts out a child because they can't provide well for them. It's not that I can't provide it, because it's a better situation for that particular animal. Yes, I love them to pieces. But I don't want to have, you know, I don't keep a ton of dogs. I own five. That's enough. And there are some breeders who have many more. I would like to have actually less, but those five I'm keeping for various reasons. Breeding dogs? No, it doesn't. What I do as a hobbyist does not reduce my love and affection for those animals.
Well, and one of the ways he justifies this legislation is discussing the puppy mills, kitten factories, and apparently bunny bundlers. That's a new one for me. And again, I am no fan of these organizations. He describes them, and this is accurate, factory-style breeding facilities located in the Midwestern states. Now, to me, anybody that's going to a pet shop, I think education, not legislation, is going to help solve this problem. And I'll put out on the record right now, I will challenge any breeder who calls himself reputable. They are not reputable if you are selling your animals to a pet store to be resold. Because as you said, Gene, you want to know what homes these animals are going to. And yeah. This, again, I think the ultimate goal, it's a slippery slope. California, we've seen discussions in numerous states, not just California, of mandatory spay and neutering. I know it's more expensive to maintain a licensed pet that hasn't been spayed or neutered. And I'm going to be seeing this. I anticipate this is going to be a first step. I see this as a slippery slope to ultimately... I don't think this is an inaccurate prognostication, an attempt in California to ban all breeding of dogs and cats, companion animals altogether. You know, people said the 10-day wait was not a really big deal for purchasing a gun. Look where California's gone since then in their gun control. I see this as something that they're going to take a lot further, and they're using the atrocities of the puppy mills. He uses the language here. The animals that do not survive, meaning the birth in the puppy mills, are plucked from their mothers much too young, only to be shipped across state lines and plopped into local storefronts. You know, we're appealing to pure emotionalism here. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Oh, definitely. They're appealing to emotionalism. What they're describing is horrendous. absolutely horrendous. And it does happen, but not, I've not seen it in this state. I really don't. It's the crackdown on counties, from counties to individual. If there's a problem, again, Californians, we rat on each other. Isn't it terrible? We've been conditioned to tattletale to big government whenever our neighbor, you know, does something wrong, or does something that might displease the crown. It does create fear. So people who are not educated are going to think that anybody who breeds animals is a puppy mill.
And here's the thing, this criminalizes those that try to work within the system, and they never stop, because here, when I lived there, you're allowed in Santa Clara County, the Crown grants you permission to have 2 dogs. Even, it doesn't matter if you have a quarter acre or if you have 5 acres. I had 2.5 acres. I had 2 dogs, but well, when I found out I was getting my third, I was supposed to get a private kennel license, significant fee to do that, which would be annual. And guess what? The very same neighbors that rat you out are the ones that are going to, you have to get permission from not only the Crown, but your own neighbors. They have to say, yeah, she's okay with us. She can have a third dog. Are you kidding me? So not only that, but you license that one dog. I only licensed one of the three. Yeah. And with that one dog, every single year I was subjected to letters for more registration, to renew my license, to get the vaccinations, and it just never stops. But this really feeds into our, you know, why we allow the government to get away from this. They are criminalizing behavior that should not be criminalized, and that is going to be tying into the next guest I have. Gene, if you want to listen to this, you're more than welcome to. I have Nicholas Somburg, who is a criminal defense attorney. He will be joining me momentarily. And he has a case, Gene, you're not going to believe this. Do you know, in Michigan, it is illegal to leave your car running so you can allow it to warm up in your own driveway?
I'm sorry. That is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm going to bring him on the show right now. You're welcome. I believe that you can be on hold and listen as long as you want. If you got to go, I understand.
Sure.
Or I can put you on hold and you stay on as long as you like, but you're going to love Nicholas. He is amazing.
Okay, great.
Okay, stand by, my friend. Nicholas Somburg, I want to welcome you back to the Suzanne Option. Thank you for holding. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm delighted to have you back. And, you know, I was talking about you with Mike Church this morning, and he admonished me. He said I was very rude to you when you were on the air with me last time. But I think us defense attorneys are pretty thick-skinned, so I don't think you took offense.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Well, we'll try, if we have time, we will revisit the escapades with your clients that went to the police station. But you had an adventure in court, and in Michigan, apparently it is against the law to warm up a vehicle in your own drive. Well, let me have you introduce the statute, because
sure.
Whether or not it's illegal in your own driveway is up for discussion, obviously. That was a heart of your defense. So let's talk about the statute and what happened with your client.
It is certainly up for debate, and I caught the end with your last guess. It really is laugh out loud funny when you hear it. The reaction from anybody, you don't got to be a lawyer to know that, you know, you see that look on people's face, they go, in your own driveway? What?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any sense. And to be clear, the Michigan state law, the MCL statute, only applies to highways and roads. It says roads and highways, right in the statute. Now, my client was cited under a city ordinance. Now, this was it's the Uniform Traffic Code, which is written by the Michigan State Police, and then individual townships and cities can choose and vote whether or not to adopt this Uniform Traffic Code.
Okay, so let me back up for a moment. The state law is that on all highways and roads, you may not leave a vehicle unattended. That
is not the same as
the local ordinance under which your client was charged?
Correct, correct.
Okay. And let's review again. What was that local ordinance, UTC?
It's the Uniform Traffic Code. I believe it's 428. You can Google it, you know, Google it for yourself. And this is a uniform code which any township or, you know, city can adopt as part of their overall ordinances.
So your client, let's tell the story. What happened to him?
Well, my client, the young man, he went out to warm up his car. He went to his girlfriend's house, pick up her and their son, who's 3 years old. And, you know, he drives a 1997 Oldsmobile, old car, you know, and he went out and turned it on to start getting warm. This is January in Michigan, and I don't know, you know, if your viewers know, but it is freezing. It is 8 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, it is extreme. And that's part of the absurdity is that everybody in Michigan warms up their car. Come on, 100%. It's like going outside without a jacket. I mean, it'd be absurd not to. So he goes and he warms up his car, and it's right in front of his house. This is a small ranch house where the driveway is like right up on the side, and the garage is in the back of the house. So I mean, he's parked right up against his house, and
his private
He goes outside, starts the car, goes inside to get his, you know, his kid bundled up, comes out, and there's a ticket on his windshield, and the car's still running. And there's a ticket on his windshield for $128.
Now, so let's make this clear. The car was parked on his private property.
Correct.
Okay. What was your defense now? Continue. What was your defense? And by the way, I want to let people know that Nicholas offered to take this case, and he took this pro bono because this individual could not afford to hire an attorney. Most people without somebody like Nicholas helping him would probably find it cheaper to pay this fine. So I tip my hat to you, my friend.
Thank you. Absolutely. I mean, it's absurd. I looked it up. We had like 30 mutual friends on Facebook. So I'm like, hey, you know, I'll reach out. Why not? So what was the question before that? Oh, what the defense is? Well, I in my motion, I have multiple defenses. The main one being is that, A, first of all, the city ordinance doesn't read the same as the state law. The city ordinance says you cannot leave a vehicle running unattended. It says on a street or any other place. Okay, now there's a lot of problems with these words, any other place.
Now, this and that's, any other place significantly expands the state.
Significantly, and that's actually argument number two. There's an even better argument, which I used, was that in Michigan, there's a case called People v. Rea, which is at the Michigan Court of Appeals. It's now actually being decided for the Michigan Supreme Court. But what they held was that your driveway is not open to the public. And the individual in the People v. Rea was charged with DUI. He was drunk in his own driveway, listening to music. The neighbors call the police. He gets charged with DUI. They ended up throwing it out because, you know, as one of the elements of DUI is that you need to be in an area open to the public. So he wasn't, the Court of Appeals said, you know, your driveway is private. It's not open to the public. So I used that for the judge. And he was basically just says, oh, no, I disagree. Like, well, you can't really, as a district court judge, you can't just disagree with an appellate court. But, you know, he was kind of upset about the whole live streaming thing, which is another issue altogether.
Okay, you know what I want to do right now, because we have a little time to cover both that. Can we take a pause on what you're saying right now, and Christopher can play what happened in court, and then we'll revisit your defenses, because you're bringing up this judge, and his behavior to me was atrocious.
39th District Court, back in session.
You may be seated.
I am, Your Honor.
Mr. Sondberg, before we get to that case, sir, I understand that you have an individual in this courtroom that has been streaming live on Facebook the proceeding. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is there anyone that gave you that permission, sir?
No, I didn't realize that I needed
permission.
I apologize about that.
Did you not know, sir, that you were an officer of the court?
I took it upon myself, Your Honor, and I...
No, I don't want to talk to you, sir. I'm asking the attorney. You knew that was going on, right?
Yes.
Did you ask permission of the court?
No.
Did you know that you were a court officer, you were an officer of the court, sir?
Yes.
And why wouldn't you let me know that was taking place?
I thought because it was already happening and we're in a public area.
This is not being live streamed, sir. Plus, they got permission from me.
I apologize, Your Honor. It won't happen again. It's my mistake.
going to find you in contempt, sir, and we're going to set a contempt hearing for you.
In my opinion, Nicholas, you had the winning argument, but this judge took it upon himself to go chasing after a red herring. The Crown was displeased because you were clearly winning this case on the facts and on the merits and charged you with contempt. We'll get back to that. Let's go back to your defenses here, which was, first of all, the local ordinance significantly expands the state ordinance by including any other place, meaning the local ordinance says that you cannot warm up your vehicle on your own driveway. Is that correct?
That's correct. So before you play that clip, I said the first argument is that, you know, I use the Court of Appeals case to say, hey, your driveway is not even open to the public, first of all. So it doesn't even apply. And I mean, just common sense, you know, this is called the Uniform Traffic Code. I mean, this applies to areas where there are traffic and other vehicles, you know, public areas. This is common sense, right? So judge says, no, I don't agree with that argument. I say, okay, well, Your Honor, even that argument aside, the plain reading, the verbiage of the statute alone doesn't apply to your own driveway. And I'll tell you why, because when it says any other place, first of all, where statutes are to be interpreted so that every word has meaning. No word can be surplusage or redundant, okay? So every word must have meaning. Now, when you say any other place, well, if you interpret that to literally mean anywhere, well, then the word street would be redundant and surplusage because any other place includes streets. So what this phrase is actually doing, what I explained to the judge, is that any other place is modifying streets. It means streets, highways, roads, boulevards, avenues, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he didn't like that as well. He didn't buy that either. But this is statutory interpretation, black and white. He really did not have the discretion to say no. I mean, I was correct in what I was saying.
Yeah, I mean, this was so crystal clear. There is no way that he could have interpreted this in the way he did. To deny your client a dismissal is just ludicrous to me. Now, let's go back to, again, you. I had a case in California where I had a client charged with public drunkenness. I show up to court for pretrial hearing, and I sit down, and before I can even open my mouth, the DA appropriately says, case dismissed. He was on his own driveway. He was not in a public place. I mean, theoretically, if your car could be in its garage and idling, garage door open, and they can come inside the what we call the curtilage of your property and cite you, does that sound within the realm of reason, the way he's interpreting this statute?
Exactly. And I use other examples. I say, you know, this law would make all valets illegal because they leave cars running unattended. This would make mechanic shops illegal because they leave vehicles running unattended. And, you know, that, in any other place, I mean, I can have my car running. You use garage. It could be in a pole barn behind a barbed wire fence with dogs. And they could say, no, illegal. You know, it doesn't make sense. And I use the example you just said, you know, like a car could be in a garage. And in the prosecutor's response to my motion, he says that is an absurd extreme example. Absurd and extreme? What are you talking about? And he actually acknowledges that any other place doesn't literally mean any other place. Because if it means any other place, how could I possibly give an absurd example? There wouldn't be one if it means any other place.
The example that he says is absurd and extreme. You could have your car inside the driveway. The garage door is open. 10 feet from the inside of your garage, your car can be parked in the driveway. We're talking a distance of a few feet, and the prosecutor calls that absurd and extreme.
In his own, I mean, half of my argument, the whole clip's online, but I'm using his own words. I mean, he basically conceded. The reply motion was so poor, it basically conceded the entire thing, but the judge, you know, I feel like had a... Whoops, sorry, I hit the mute button. The judge kind of had his mind made up, I feel. You know, this is a major revenue source for the city. I mean, they drive around and ticket people. This is basically a scam, you know. They don't have authority of law to be doing this. It does not cover private driveways, okay? But they're going around and take, I mean, $128 times what? Thousands? You know, over a winter? So, I mean, you do the math.
You know, and that really goes to the heart of the issue, is what is behind a lot of these ordinances. I'll share an example. My friend Robin in the state of California, in Bakersfield, last summer, 4th of July, right before the holiday, major wildfires. The SOs were absolutely taxed to the extreme. Some of them were taking off on the 4th of July, and the county council was very upset. They wanted them to continue working under the auspices of keeping people safe, but what they really wanted to send them after was people using illegal fireworks, because the fine was $1,500 each time. So this is what we talk about all the time, that a lot of these ordinances, laws, speed laws are really geared towards the generation of revenue. And a police officer in Mountain View, California had told my dad one time, hey, listen, you better make sure every stop sign you get to, those wheels are not rolling at all. You come to a complete stop. Use your turn signals. Do not go 1 mile over, because right now we are suffering from a severe budget shortfall, and we need to bring all the money in that we can. We don't have protect and to serve. We have law enforcement, and that's really what this issue is all about.
It's revenue generation, and I mean, I call it organized crime. I mean, it is what it is. We need money, so we're just going to, you know, drive around and steal from people who aren't harming anybody, aren't doing anything. Oh, you're warming up your car for your family? Well, that doesn't please the crown, so you owe us $128. I mean, it's absurd, but people are waking up to this, and the overall public, even though I lost the hearing and I was held in contempt, it's been overwhelmingly positive. People reaching out to me, calling me, messaging me, adding me on Facebook. Overwhelmingly positive. Because this is it's common sense, and they know that this is a joke. It's a scam. And, you know, we're appealing the circuit court. So who knows how deep this goes, how far they're going to push it. But I really feel like, you know, this is a blessing in disguise. Because if we got it thrown out in district court, well, it wouldn't really help. It wouldn't really make a difference. But if we get it up in circuit court, well, now it sets a little bit of precedent where you can't do it now, at least in Macomb County. You know, we'll have some precedent set.
Well, absolutely. And like you said, going back to revenue, what was the justification they had for this law? It involved stolen vehicles, correct?
Yes, because, you know, somebody might jump in your car and steal it if you're leaving it, if it's running, you know. Somebody might jump in your car and steal. It's like, well, why don't you go catch the car thieves? And if that's your justification, you know, I had the cop on the stand, and I was cross-examining him. I go, so, you know, you do this for public safety because someone might steal the car, right? He goes, right. I go, okay, and you saw the car running? Yeah. I go, and you walked up there and put the ticket under the windshield, right? Yeah. And I'm like, and the car's right next to the house. He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, did you knock on the door? He's like, no. He's all shaking. You can watch the video. He's just shaking. Did you knock on the door? No. I'm like, well, did you tell anybody? No. I'm like, so you just drove off and left the car just how you found it? I'm like, isn't that dangerous? How does that help the public safety? I mean, he just had no response. And I mean, and that was it. I mean, that was checkmate, game over. You guys are criminals. This is a organized crime, you know, situation. And,
well, exactly. And if he had left the car in that state, and it had been stolen after he left the ticket, would he be an accessory?
Right. Well, I mean, what does the crown think? Oh, this piece of paper will protect you from the criminals. Like, what are you talking? It's so absurd and illogical. I mean, anybody, you could tell, you could go and find a bum on the street, you know, and say, hey, you could tell them, hey, man, I got a ticket for a car in my own driveway. They're going to go, what? It doesn't make sense. The law is supposed to lay out common sense and in order and reasonableness. And this just violates everything.
Well, and oftentimes they have these regulations that say it's about educating the public. Well, to that, I would say if you really wanted to educate this individual, you could have knocked on the door and let them know that there is a risk of the vehicle being stolen, at which point the person as an adult should have the right to decide whether or not they want to do this. I also wonder, you know, oftentimes yards, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just, you know, we were just just thinking of like all sorts of stuff. My friends, this was a 1997, I think like a Oldsmobile Concorde or like an old piece of junk car. It's probably worth like $2,000, something like that. Now, if you have that car running, and say right next to it, you have a brand new Lamborghini Aventador convertible, $500,000. Which one is inviting the thief more? You know, so if you have too nice of a car, should we also like charge you money? Like, hey, you know, don't have a Lamborghini because, you know, you're inviting a thief. Like, where does it end? You know, are we gonna ticket you for leaving your garage door open? Or how about not locking your front door? You know, you're inviting thieves. I mean,
well, that happened. We had a home out in Discovery Bay in the Delta. And before that area was completely developed, we'd left the garage door open, and somebody came along, backed their truck up, and stole a bunch of my dad's tools. Should he have been charged for inviting that thief in, and maybe he would have driven away too fast trying to get away? You know, at what point do we stop criminalizing normal behavior? Because it's simply easier to use subjects, as ATM machines than it is to go after those that are actually committing the crimes.
Right. Absolutely. They got to fund those pensions. Got to keep the money flowing. I mean, you know how many rapes go unsolved? How many murders? You know, I'm a landlord, and I've had houses in Pontiac, which is a, you know, lower income area, and I've had break-ins, and the cops come and say, well, what do you want us to do about it? You know, your job, man. You know, take some fingerprints and check some, like, local street cameras. I mean, do something. But, you know, that takes time. That takes effort. And you know what? If you catch the person, you're not going to get paid, right? There's no incentive for them to actually do this. So, what do? They drive around, oh, you're smoking a plant? Well, you know, we can spend $12,000 to send a SWAT team out to your house, you know, but we can't, whenever there's an actual crime, an actual break-in, well, we're going to look the other way because, you know, it's too much work.
Well, again, going towards the two justifications for this law, education and safety, it shows that they didn't care about either one in this case. And if you're just listening, by the way, I have Nicholas Somburg, a defense attorney from the state of Michigan. We are discussing an individual who he represents who was charged with having a vehicle warming up on that person's own driveway on their own private property. We're discussing how these laws are really designed not for safety, not for education, but to generate revenue because, you know, we know across this continental landmass, every state in this union is suffering from significant budgetary shortfalls. And unfortunately, law enforcement officers' reputations are taking a significant hit because they're trying to do their jobs and they're spending the majority of their time enforcing these asinine laws. Now, going back to the court appearance, I have to say I was very impressed with how you handled it. It was clear to me that this was going to be dismissed outright. The judge's demeanor when he came back in and realized that you had been live streaming to me shows that he was swayed not by your arguments, but by the fact that he felt that you didn't pay him the respect he felt he was deserved. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, when he came out, I mean, I could just tell by his body language. I was like, oh, I think I'm going to lose. You know, it's like, what can you do? But it really, truly, truly, honestly was an honest mistake. And had, you know, things been handled differently, you know, I think that would have been really, really clear. I don't know. Do you want me to get into that portion of what happened at this time? Or
yeah, we have a few minutes.
Okay. So, you know, I go in the courtroom. I was just quick summary. I go in the courtroom. There's Channel 4, Channel 7 there with big, you know, big broadcast cameras. And I go and I ask.
There were other cameras in the courtroom. Let's be very clear about that.
Yeah, they're, you know, and not just little phones. I mean, they have big broadcast cameras on tripods, right? You know, the works. And I'm like, hey, did you guys sign anything or get any sort of permission to be able to do this? And they're like, no. And some guy, who actually I found out later was a news anchor. I thought he was an attorney because he was wearing a nice suit and had papers in his hand. But he chimed in. He goes, no, man, this is a public area. You can film all you want. So I'm like, okay, great, fantastic.
And guess what? So, he's right.
he is right. And, you know, and that made sense to me. And quite frankly, I'm focused on the hearing. You know, I'm practicing my arguments in my head. So I tell my friend who was assisting me, I go, hey, man, live stream it for sure. You know, so my friend is openly and obviously, he is standing there with a phone that non-lawyers are not even supposed to have. He's standing there openly and obviously live streaming from the beginning. And a court officer walks up to him and says, sir, can you please remove your hat? Okay. So, and he removes his hat. Now, about halfway through, we take a recess. Court officer comes up to me. He goes, hey, you got to tell your assistant that he's not allowed to live stream. I go, I thought it was okay. He goes, you need permission from the judge. I'm like, okay, well, let me go talk to the judge. He goes, no, you need to fill out a permission slip. I'm like, okay, well, I go and go to the court clerk. I get a permission slip, fill it out, turn it in. And, you know, the beginning of that video is the next thing that happened. Judge comes out, you know, pissed, throws his papers down, chews me out. I'm like, hey, man, I'm sorry. I did honest mistake here. And I think indicating that, you know, it's already being live streamed, which he didn't know or didn't realize, is one thing. There are no signs in the courtroom, which it said. I actually, you know, I went and looked up the court rules. I'm like, hey, I better actually see how much trouble I'm in. And, you know, you need permission to record, but it also says that the court is supposed to have signs inside and outside of each courtroom conspicuously placed, so obviously. And there were no signs. So I think under the whole totality of the circumstances, very reasonable for me to do what, you know, at least two other people are doing. There's a half dozen reporters with all sorts of recording devices. I mean, I requested the file to see what permission slips were turned in, if any. I'm going to try to pick that up today. I want to see if I was just blatantly singled out or what. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, okay, I'll apologize, you know, which I did off the bat. You know, I'm sorry. I didn't know that I needed permission. I thought it was okay. But to hold me in contempt, I mean, that's such a serious thing. And you as an attorney, you know, like, those are serious words. And I feel like, you know, it was not warranted. It was an overreaction. But contempt would be if he told me not to record and then I did it anyway.
You did it anyway. Exactly. You know, his whole demeanor, what a pompous ass. Judge Marco Santilla, shame on this guy. I had a similar incident happen to me in California. I approached from the galleys, she called the gallows. I approached talked to an attorney that was sitting at his table, obviously beyond what they call the bar, the rail there. And I wished him good luck. It was a very public case that was going on. And this judge this wasn't even the judge. It was the freaking bailiff, a sheriff, an employee, a servant of the public, chastised me for approaching the bench, which I didn't do, in quote, his courtroom. The audacity of these people.
It's just insane. I mean, you know, this is a system we're under. I mean, I'm an anarcho-capitalist, right? So I would like to privatize everything. I think we had a private court system that worked through arbitration and mediation and setting bonds and escrow. We could have a much better system that actually makes people whole for harms done and that doesn't punish people for doing nothing.
Well, and we have issues of civil asset forfeiture. We have the privatization also of the prison system, this war on drugs. I really feel that we are living in a police state. I don't know if you saw this, but I had posted it about the distracted driving law. There's one in New Jersey, one in Maine. I don't know if they I think I read something in Michigan where they actually had officers and buses or vehicles that were higher up so they could look into vehicles to see if drivers were driving distracted
as well. That's not something new. You know, the Crown has a new revenue scam that they're going to now be not in marked cars, but driving shot, you know, have a cop shotgun driving around, you know, looking for people on their phones or distracted. It's like, guys, like, get a real job, like, go do something helpful. You know, like, this is just pissing people off. And it's just, like, people are sick of it. It's just one after another. Oh, we could find you here and there. And I'm sick of it. It's not helpful. I know police officers. I was at the gym yesterday with my buddy who's a cop, you know, and he's on my side 100%. You know, his buddies told me they can't be public about it, you know, but they're on my side 100%. They think it's bull, you know. And there are good cops, and the good cops think it's bull. Well, you know, and the bad ones, they say, well, you know, it's the law, even though it's not, you know.
Yeah, I'm just following orders. We've heard that one before. And to the cops like your friend, you know, hats off to them. I had a friend, his kids were in Taekwondo when I lived in California. He was a he was on the Santa Clara County SO SWAT team. And we had numerous stories, and he was very much against what was going on in California. He said, I have told my supervisors, if it ever came to gun confiscation, they will count me. They can count me out. I absolutely refuse. He was not going to go against, you know, what we're seeing out there. In fact, he said, if it ever came to it, I would knock on your door. And as he's shaking his head no, as he's saying this, you do not have any guns on the premises, do you? No, sir. Thank you very much. So there are some really good ones out there. But gosh darn it, to those that think it's okay, like this friend of my dad's, to say, hey, you better make sure you don't make a single mistake, knowing my dad has never committed a crime in his life. Well, a moral or ethical crime. I think we commit probably four before we even, you know, get to the grocery store. To be okay with doing that, and it brings up another issue of jury nullification. What comes next for your client? You're going to appeal this?
I'm going to appeal to the circuit court, and I think this was a really bad call by the judge. I didn't run through all my different arguments. There's other really good ones. I don't know how much time we have, but I think this is pretty clear cut. It may be, you know, these district courts, I mean, they power trip and they call shots, and I guess they don't really think about the consequences or care, but the circuit court does look into things a little bit more closely. They probably won't even make a decision on the spot. They'll probably look at the law and think about it and use some logic and come to a decision. And I think it's very, very clear on its face that, you know, this ordinance doesn't apply to your own driveway, period.
And one of the first things we're taught in law school is that, according to due process, laws must be able to be clearly understood so we know what actions are prescribed by such law. When we start talking about the distracted drivers, anything could fall under that category. We could have, like you mentioned, this cop riding shotgun and looks in. What about changing your radio station? What if you have kids in the car, pets in the car, or people we know using a GPS where they, God forbid, they touch that screen and activate that? I mean, this is, like you said, this is about generating revenue. How about the red light traffic cameras? We know that those actually cause more accidents. You would think if they were concerned about safety, the city councils would be rushing to tear these down faster than monuments in New Orleans.
Right. And all the while, the police drive around with more computers and a frickin' space shuttle. They got a computer here, there, you know, all these
exactly.
Lights and dials and everything. They're always on the radio talking to people. You know, it's like, you guys are distracted, if anything. You know, leave people alone.
Nicholas Somburg, criminal defense attorney extraordinaire. I absolutely love having you on my show. I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. He's going to be coming on the next show after me. His name's Mark Kresslins, and he is going to be hosting the Mark Kresslins Show. He's on every day from 3 to 5 p.m. Mark, hey, what do you have any words for
my
friend Nicholas here?
Hey, Nicholas, I'm thoroughly enthralled with this conversation you're having with Suzanne. I'd also like to introduce one other benefit that the government gets from this type of nonsense is an exercising of power and thus creating fear in the population. And we know that fear is a very powerful tool that government used to keep us on the reservation. And this is just yet another exercise of that over somebody. And as it gets published in the papers and people read it, it's like, oh, no, I better see if my car is running out in my driveway because I might get in trouble. And that sense, that fear of getting in trouble really tends to paralyze the average citizen from enjoying freedom, doesn't it?
That's right. I mean, that's how they stay in control. I mean,
yep,
with everything, is that you need us. And
yes.
Could you imagine, oh, if there wasn't a government, well, then it would be like, what's that one movie called? You know, where you're allowed to kill somebody for a day or two.
Oh, yes. I forgot that. I know what you're talking about, that movie.
And I see these as basically pure propaganda hippies. Oh, if there wasn't government for a day, everybody would start killing each other. No, I mean, no. And this is fear. And you're absolutely right. It's fear so that they can maintain control.
Nicholas, I'll tell you, I've got to have you on my show sometime because these are the questions that I've begun to ask here on my show, fundamental questions like, why do we need government? Well, when we can get to those types of questions, Nicholas, I think we really get to the root of the problem, don't we?
Absolutely.
We are out of time because the music is rolling. And Nicholas, I want you to keep us informed. What is next now? You have a contempt hearing. When is that?
I have a contempt hearing May 25th. If anyone wants to add me on Facebook, my name is Nick Somburg, or go to somburglaw.com. I post stuff. I post updates about the case all the time. And that's it. Go ahead. Thank you for having me on.
I look forward to having you back, my friend. And stay tuned, everybody, for Mark Kresslins. I will be sticking around to hang out with him. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Suzanne Option on the Crusade Channel, where we hit you hard with king-size truth coming at you through radio-sized speakers. And you got-